Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to be talking about the Fed meeting and the interest rate change decision and where things head from here. We've also got a really interesting update from Ford on the Mustang Mach-E. That data that we talked about yesterday from NHTSA did end up getting published today, so we'll walk through that quickly. We've also got news on FSD version 11, Tesla insurance, and a couple other items as well. All right, so as expected with the Fed meeting, we did see a volatile day in the markets today, but things did finish in the green, the NASDAQ up 2.5%, Tesla up 5.5%, closing at $699 per share. So as we had talked about, the expectation in recent days for the size of the interest rate increase from the Fed had risen to 0.75%, or a 75 basis point increase. The Fed did go ahead and make that adjustment to the targeted rate, which now sits between 1.5% and 1.75%. Obviously, the markets reacted positively to this, and everyone kind of has their own reasoning behind why that is, whether it's because it wasn't a 1% increase, or because the market is glad that the Fed is acting swiftly and doing what they need to do. I've seen a variety of explanations. I'll leave it up to you to determine which combination of explanations seems the most plausible. And of course, we'll have to wait and see what happens tomorrow, as sometimes it takes the market a little bit of time to process. I think it was the last meeting or the one prior where we had seen a strong reversal the following day, and CNBC's only explanation was that the market had digested the news. So we'll see, and of course there is more to this release than just that interest rate increase. A lot of it has to do with the forward guidance. A lot of that is contained in the SEP, or the Summary of Economic Projections, and one part of that is the so-called dot plot, which charts the individual committee members' expectations for where the interest rates should be at certain periods of time. So by the end of 2022, most members see the interest rate between 3.25%, 3.75%, the average falling at 3.4%. So this is the first time the SEP has been updated since the March meeting, and at that time, the average expectation for the end of this year was 1.5 percentage points lower. The Fed then sees interest rates continuing to rise, albeit relatively slightly, in 2023, and then starting to decline in 2024. As for the immediate future, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell did say during the Q&A portion of his press conference today that, quote, "From the perspective of today, either a 50 basis point or a 75 basis point increase seems most likely at our next meeting," end quote. The media was of course interested in if Powell would be open to a 100 basis point increase, and he really didn't want to answer that if that would be on the table at all. He just reiterated, as he frequently does, that they'll stay flexible, they'll react to the data as it comes in, and he did note that the CPI report for May that we talked about on Friday was a major factor in the decision to go with the 75 basis point increase this time around. So the next CPI update that we get, which will be in early to mid-July, is going to have a lot of weight on it. Near the end of his comments, Powell noted that this is a, quote, "extraordinarily uncertain environment," end quote. So we'll see where things go from here, but if nothing else, we've got at least more information now, and the next Fed meeting will be on July 26th and 27th. All right, getting into more Tesla-specific news, we are actually going to start off with an update from Ford that is quite relevant. This is on the Ford Mustang Mach-E. Ford CFO today said at an investor conference with Deutsche Bank that the Ford Mustang Mach-E is no longer profitable for the company. He said that while it was a profitable vehicle for Ford in the past, that is no longer currently the case, and that was attributed to rising commodity costs, particularly with battery materials. Now, this is pretty interesting because although Ford lists the starting price for the Mach-E at around $44,000, most of the vehicles that you can find seem to start at $50,000 or above, with just a few a little below that price point, so their average selling price is probably above $50,000. If they're not making any money on that, which I would assume means gross profitability, that's not entirely clear. Maybe they're accounting for some operating costs in there too, but I would think that they'd want to communicate this with as rose-colored of a light as possible. So if they were losing money after considering operating costs, they could at least still say that, hey, we've got a positive gross margin while they work to improve the business. But that's not even what they're saying here. So if their average selling price is around $50,000 or above, that means their cost of goods sold right around that level as well. And that would compare to a Fremont-made Model Y, which very likely has cost of goods sold somewhere between $35,000 and $40,000. So you're probably looking at least a $10,000 difference in cost here between those two vehicles, probably at least 25% higher costs for Ford than Tesla. That's a lot. That's the difference between Tesla selling a vehicle at 25% plus gross margins and Ford selling it for nothing. Now, Ford says that they've got a lot of demand for the Mustang Mach-E. There are some in inventory, but if you try to order a new one, it says that, you know, you really can't order one. So I'm not entirely sure why they haven't decided to raise prices more to account for the higher cost of goods sold, especially considering that Ford is still eligible for the full $7,500 tax credit. So pretty interesting, that's where we're at today. On one hand, it shows the difficulty in competing with Tesla, but on the other hand, Perhaps this hints at the severity of cost increases on electric vehicles. Not that Tesla's going to go to no margin or anything like that, but maybe if Tesla's seeing similar cost increases, there could be some more margin pressure. Now, I think a lot of that's already built into expectations. I think Tesla's price increases have accounted for that, but that would be the bearish interpretation of this update from Ford. All right, next up, a continuation of the topic that we had brought up yesterday, and that is NHTSA's release of crash data involving advanced driver assistance systems. So what NHTSA has collected and published here is just basically the number of crashes that have in some way involved an advanced driver assistance system, which they're considering to be involved if the system was active within 30 seconds of the crash, and then that is being reported by manufacturer. So Tesla here, we see 273 crashes, Honda with 90, the rest at 10 or below. So that's basically the gist of what's being reported in here. They do include some other information like where the vehicle damage occurred, types of injuries, but there's really no usage statistics in here. So like we had talked about, there's really no way to make any sort of fair comparison. And that's just one of the issues with this data, which NHTSA actually does talk about a lot in the report. They note problems such as access to crash data may affect crash reporting. So they say that many level 2 ADAS equipped vehicles may be limited in their capabilities to record data related to driving automation system engagement and crash circumstances. So we know Tesla does obviously a better job of capturing, recording, and reporting those things because of their higher level of connectivity. NHTSA also says that incident report data may be incomplete or unverified. The same crash may have multiple reports. And then the huge one here, the report data are not normalized. So they say that, quote, reporting entities are not required to submit information regarding the number of vehicles they have manufactured, the number of vehicles they are operating, or the distances traveled by those vehicles. Data required to contextualize the incident rates are limited. Data regarding the number of crashes reported for any given manufacturer or operator, therefore, have not been normalized or adjusted by any measure of exposure, including the operational driving domain or vehicle miles traveled. For example, a reporting entity could report an absolute number of crashes that is higher than another reporting entity, but operate a higher number of vehicles for many more miles, end quote. So this is exactly what we talked about yesterday. So it's good to see it being acknowledged, but it is, again, very basic. That should definitely be the expectation. My question then is, okay, if this is so extremely limited in terms of what we can actually learn from it, what's really the point of releasing it? The NHTSA administrator seems to agree with this point, saying that, quote, I would advise caution before attempting to draw conclusions based only on the data that we're releasing. In fact, the data alone may raise more questions than they answer, end quote. All right, well, I'm not often finding myself arguing against transparency. I just don't really see much of a point here. I think the idea is to collect this data and refine the takeaways over time. So hopefully the intent is in the right place, but at this point it would seem to just cause more confusion and false narratives than anything else. Of course, most of the responsibility for understanding this data and its limitations should fall on the media, but they're also just going to do whatever they can to generate clicks. They don't really care. Anyway, NHTSA is also releasing a similar report on ADS or automated driving systems. This would be SAE level 3 through 5, which should not include autopilot, should also not include FSD beta at this point. Yet there is one crash reported on here for Tesla, so that's kind of interesting if that's Tesla testing. But looking into the data, I think this is just being misfiled into this group because this was reported by a consumer rather than Tesla on a 2018 Model 3 in Kentucky. So maybe this was an FSD beta crash, but even then it should fall into the Advanced Driver Assistance System Level 2, so probably just misclassified. The only other interesting thing about the ADS report is that Waymo has reported 62 crashes, but again, we can't contextualize that at all. Probably just shows us that they're putting up the most ADS miles. And the next in crashes would be Cruise and GM at 39 combined. All right, moving on from NHTSA, but sticking with autonomy, Elon was asked about version 11 on Twitter, any idea when that would be coming? And he said, quote, I'm driving an alpha version of FSD on highway and it's not quite ready, probably ready for wide release this summer, end quote. So it's been a while since we've had an update on that. Obviously not ready if Tesla hasn't released it yet. I think we all knew that, but good to have an update on that timeline, though not one that I would put a ton of stock in. All right, next we've got some news on Tesla Insurance, Drive Tesla Canada surfacing this from Coverager, which has learned that Tesla has filed for Tesla Insurance in both Maryland and Florida. The targeted effective date for these programs are June 16th and October 20th, respectively. So we could see this happening very soon in Maryland and then hopefully for Florida in Q3. If these are approved, looking at new vehicle registrations by state for 2021, these two states, especially Florida being the third largest state auto market, would add another 10.5% of the U.S. auto market covered by Tesla insurance. Right now, the states that have Tesla insurance sort of 2.0 with telematics covers 22.3% of the auto market. After these states, that would jump up to 32.8, so about a third. And if you count California, where Tesla has Tesla insurance, just not the telematics-based version, that's another 11.5%, so that jumps up to 44.4% coverage. So nice to see the progress there. And then next we've got an update on the Elon Musk spat with the SEC. Of course, we know that a judge had ruled against Elon's request to squash the settlement agreement that was a result of the funding secured tweet. Well, now Elon is going to be appealing that ruling, so taking another shot to try to get that thrown out. All right, last couple of items for today. We've got an update from NIO. They have unveiled their new ES7. This is an all-electric SUV expected to begin delivering in August this year. It definitely is in the more premium segment, starting at 468,000 RMB, which is about $70,000. That's for a 75 kilowatt hour pack. They do have a version with a 100 kilowatt hour pack starting at $78,000, and actually a 150 kilowatt hour pack, which I don't see pricing listed for. On the CLTC test cycle, so the China Light Duty Vehicle test cycle, they list the ranges at 485 kilometers, 620 kilometers, and over 850 kilometers for those respective packs, which come in at 301 miles, 385 miles, and 528 plus miles. Of course, it's always hard to compare ranges on the CLTC test cycle to EPA, for example, but probably the best comparison here would be the Performance Model Y, which Tesla lists at 615 kilometers CLTC, priced at 418,000 RMB, so about $62,000, pretty significantly undercutting this NIO ES7. So it looks like it's about one price tier up, and it does have that larger pack offering, but it looks like it'll need some additional legs to stand on to compete with the Model Y. All right, last couple of quick things here. First, on SpaceX, we had talked previously about the finding of no significant impact from the FAA for Starship launches from Starbase. Elon on Twitter yesterday saying that Starship will be ready to fly next month, and that they'll have a second Starship stack ready to fly in August and then monthly thereafter. So we're heading into a very, very exciting time here for SpaceX, and then we've got an update here on the Boring Company as well. The Las Vegas City Council today announced that they have unanimously approved the agreement with the Boring Company to extend the Vegas Loop Tunnel system to city limits in downtown Las Vegas. So more tunneling to come there, and that will wrap it up for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, June 16th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.